For today, featuring the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a chapter by chapter, verse by verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of the Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues his message, The Temple of God, as we pick up in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 16. And now, with today's study, here's Pastor Chuck.
Every believer in Jesus Christ has the Spirit of God dwelling in him. The moment you ask Jesus Christ to come into your life, the Spirit of God begins to indwell you. Paul said, "Don't you know you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God is dwelling in you?" And then he goes on to declare, if any man defiles the temple of God, him shall God destroy. Now in the sixth chapter, he tells us some of the ways by which the temple of God can be defiled. As he tells us there, your body is the naos of God. And if I commit fornication, Paul said, I am then sinning against my body. My body, the temple of God, member of Jesus Christ, joined unto him. And if I then join it unto a harlot, I am actually bringing Christ in participation in that relationship. Sinning against the body, defiling the temple of God. And the warning here is, he who defiles the temple of God, him shall God destroy. I believe that we need to honor and respect our bodies as the temple of God. I believe that we should take care of our bodies. I believe that we should seek to eat nutritious food. I think that we should stay away from junk food as much as possible, because I believe that we can defile the temple of God with harmful food products and other harmful things. But basically, though it isn't primarily physical but spiritual defiling of the temple of God, it is important that we keep ourselves pure and holy. For if any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy. For the temple of God, the naos of God, is holy, which temple ye are. So it is a call to a holy, righteous life. Let no man deceive himself. If any man among you seems to be wise in this world, let him become a fool that he might be wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. For it is written, he taketh the wise in their own craftiness. There is a growing realization that science is a hoax, and that men of science are guilty of many times perpetrating hoaxes, as they are supposedly dealing with absolutes. And science is supposed to be the accumulation of absolutes and facts. But one of the greatest to arise, Einstein, said, there is nothing that is absolute, it is all relative. And so there is quite an interesting movement now among the intellectuals, as again we're beginning to discover that not all science is science, and that there's a lot of hoax in scientific circles. Now, to me, the biggest hoax that men supposedly of science are trying to perpetrate upon people is that of the theory of evolution, supposedly a scientific theory, very credible, and every science accepts it as fact, according to those who espouse it so heartily. Even though there are many scientists that are arising now and say, wait a minute, you know, there are too many gaps, unexplainable things here, and evolution is not a satisfactory explanation of the existence of life. But there are men who claim to be scientists who are trying to perpetrate the hoax of evolution upon society. And admittedly, they have been quite successful in the perpetration of this hoax. But it's not science at all. It doesn't really possess the necessary empirical evidence to prove it as a science. They have not yet demonstrated how that in a closed system you can have a spontaneous generation of life. In fact, we have billions of evidences that show that you cannot have spontaneous generation of life within a closed system. Now, think for a moment. If life could be spawned in a closed system, every time you went to the store and bought a can of sardines or tuna or peaches or whatever, you would never know what might come out of that closed system of the spontaneous generation of life within it. There you have a closed system. There you have billions and billions and billions of cans of goods that have been sold. And we have confidence in the inability of a closed system to spontaneously generate life. And so we do can our foods and we seal them up in order that they might be preserved in that state, in order that life forms may not form within it. Now, unfortunately, there are times when they were not correctly sealed or they were not correctly sterilized to beginning, and life forms can develop in them. And when we were working in the market, quite often in the dog food, we would find there was a spontaneous generation of life. And whenever the cans would be puffed and pushing out at the end, we'd always toss them back for the salesman when he came to give them back to him, because somehow it wasn't sterilized completely when they canned it, and there was this formation going on inside that was pushing out the ends of the can. And every once in a while, you'd get one that would pop in the box, and you'd have, you know, that, well, you'd have to just send the whole box back because it would just explode and get all over the rest of the cans. Yet it's being offered to us as scientific fact. It's a hoax in the name of science. And the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. He takes the wise in their own craftiness. And again, the Lord knows the thoughts of the wise, that they are empty. Therefore, let no man glory in men. Now, Paul is saying, don't glory in Paul. Don't glory in Apollos. Don't glory in man. Man at his best is an empty show. The thoughts of the wise are empty. Don't glory in men, for all things are yours. whether of Paul or Apollos or Peter or of the world, or life or death or things present or things to come, all are yours. And ye are Christ, and Christ is God's. So I can learn and I can gain from Paul or Apollos or Peter or whoever else. Everyone has something to offer. Of course, with some, you've got to sift through so much before you find something that's worthwhile that it's easier just not to listen. But all things are yours, and so learn to gain from the whole world around you. So let a man so account of us as of the ministers of Christ, or the servants of Christ, and stewards of the mysteries of God. Ministers of Christ, the Greek word there is the under rowers. They were the guys who were down in the bottom of the ship handling the oars, usually chained to the oars. And the fellow up on top would call the order for them to row. And which side to row? The under rowers. And so Paul uses that particular Greek word here. We are the under rowers of Christ. We're down on the bottom level. We're just pulling the oars at the command of Christ. But then we are stewards. And the steward was the one who was in charge of the master's goods. He was the one who ordered the affairs of the household. He bought for the necessities of the household. It was entrusted into him the goods of the master, though he was still himself a servant, but overseeing the goods of the master. So Paul uses the second Greek word as a steward. We are the overseers of those things that belong to the master. Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. The one requirement, really, of stewardship is that of faithfulness to that which I've been called to do, or that which has been entrusted to me. Your faithfulness to that which God has called you to do is the thing for which one day you will receive your reward or lack of reward. Have you been faithful in the call of God on your life? It's required of stewards that they be found faithful. Now, Paul said, but with me, it's a very small thing that I should be judged of you or of man's judgment. I don't even judge myself. Now, evidently, they had been saying that I am of Paul, or I am of Apollos, or I am of Peter, to the exclusion of the others. In other words, there are people that cannot show, it seems, a loyalty to more than one. Or if they have a loyalty to one, they have to put down everyone else. And so in saying, I'm of Apollos, they were really putting down Paul and judging Paul. Paul said, it doesn't bother me that you judge me. And so the first judgment that we do often face is the judgment of man. But man's judgment at best is faulty. Because one thing that we cannot judge is the motive by which a man did something. Because we cannot judge motives, our judgment is not a true judgment. So they really didn't know Paul. They didn't know the heart of Paul, and yet they were saying things against Paul. And Paul said, hey, I've heard that you've been judging me. That doesn't bother me. You should judge me. I don't even judge myself. The second judgment is that of self-judgment. Now, Paul is talking about, I don't judge myself in the sense of condemning myself. I think that it's tragic that there are people that are constantly judging themselves and condemning themselves. Oh, I'm no good. Oh, I can't do anything right. Oh, I'm such a mess, you know. And they're constantly judging themselves. Paul said, I don't even judge myself. Now, I believe that you should do your best and then just commit the rest. Hey, it was the best I could do. So it is a mess. It's all I can do. That was my best, you see. And so I don't go away and moan and complain because, oh, I really failed. Oh, I didn't do a good job. Oh, I didn't say the right thing. I did my best. So I just leave the rest of it with the Lord. Lord, that's the best I can do. Sorry about that, but, you know, that's the best I can do. So I don't beat myself or worry about it or fret over, oh, did I do the right thing or is, you know, should I have done more or whatever. Yeah, I did my best. I did what I felt was right in the situation. So I don't go on condemning myself for what came of it. It was the best I could do. Now, many times the best I can do isn't sufficient, but I can't help that. It's the best I can do. So I don't judge myself in the sense of condemning myself. For I know nothing by myself, yet am I not hereby justified. Now, he's actually saying, I don't know anything against myself. That's quite a statement. But he said, even at that, it doesn't justify me. It doesn't mean that I'm righteous just because I don't know anything against myself. That doesn't make me righteous. But he that judges me is the Lord. Now, here's the third judgment, and this is the important one. This is one I'm concerned about. I don't care what you say about me. I do, but I, you know. So what? I can't help that. I'm not even concerned about my own opinion of myself, but I am deeply concerned of the Lord's opinion of me. You may judge me for what I've done. Doesn't bother me. I may judge myself. That isn't important. I stand before the Lord, and He is my judge. And that is the judgment that I am concerned with. What is the Lord's opinion of me and what I have done? Therefore, judge nothing before the time. In other words, wait for the day of God's judgment. The fire will come and the works will be proved, what sort and what manner they are, the motives behind them. So don't judge anything before its time. Don't prejudge until the Lord comes, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts. And then shall every man have praise of God. Notice how the Lord is going to judge. The hidden things, the things of your heart, the motives. Hey, that is heavy duty. The Bible says everything is naked and open before Him with whom we have to do. Oh, Lord, I really didn't mean it. Oh, you didn't? Let's take a look. And God will be able to project what was in your heart and mind as you were doing it on a screen. You remember Ezekiel was taken by the Spirit to the wall, and the Lord said, dig a hole through the wall, now crawl in. And he crawled in, and inside he was looking around and all of the pornography. And Ezekiel said, Lord, that's horrible, all the pornography around here. And the Lord said, I have allowed you to go inside of the minds of the leaders there in Jerusalem. That's what's going on in their minds, Ezekiel. God can see into your mind. God knows what's going on in your heart. And so the day will come when God will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels, the intents, the motivations of our hearts. And then shall every man have the praise of God. And these things, brethren, I have in a figure transferred to myself and to Apollos. Now, transferring that over to Apollos and to me for your sakes, that ye may learn in us not to think of men above that which is written, that no one of you be puffed up for or against another. Don't become divided over the instruments of God that God may use for his purposes in your life. Receive from all. Be benefited by all. It doesn't mean that you have to turn against one just because you're gaining from another.
Gather the kids. It's story time with Pastor Chuck. Listen and read along as Pastor Chuck shares with every child how Noah practiced godly principles, trusted God through the storm, and why God kept his family safe. Your children will discover how God gave the animals an instinct to enter the ark and see Noah's incredible obedience and faith in action. And the best part? This story helps you teach your children the same valuable truth. They can choose to obey God too. With 40 full-color illustrated pages, this book is perfect for ages 2 to 8 and includes an audio CD so your little ones can follow along with Pastor Chuck again and again. It's never too early to start reading Bible stories and imprinting God's Word on their hearts. Order your copy of The Story of Noah today from The Word for Today by calling 1-800-272-9673 or visiting twft.com. You'll also find many other resources to help your family grow in faith, one story at a time.
May the Lord be with you. May the Lord watch over you this week. May the Lord bless you. May He fill you with His love, with His Spirit, with His grace, that you might show forth that grace of God in your dealings with others, that you might manifest the Spirit, the nature of Jesus Christ in your relationship with others, that you might walk even as He walked, in Jesus' name.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of 1 Corinthians on our next broadcast, as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible, and we do hope you'll make plans to join us. This message has been provided to you by the generous supporters of The Word for Today. For additional information about how you can support this ministry, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org. There you'll find free message downloads from Pastor Chuck, as well as links to our podcast and other resources to help you grow in your Christian walk. You can also call us at 1-800-272-9673, or you can order a physical copy of today's message by mentioning 1 Corinthians 3 through 4. Again, that phone number is 1-800-272-9673. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today.
Little country church on the edge of town. People coming every day from miles around, for meetings and for Sunday school. And it's very plain to see, it's not the way.
This program program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.